There's a fresh face in higher ed on the First Coast as Florida State College at Jacksonville welcomes a new president. Good morning. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Jessica Palumbo, sitting in for Melissa Ross. Just ahead, what should the role of Jacksonville's community college be in the larger community? John Avendano, the new president and CEO of FSCJ, joins us in studio. What are your questions for the new prez? Call us at 549-2937. Email the show at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Leave a response to our First Coast Connect Facebook post on today's topic, or tweet me at Jessica Pub Radio. Then later, a documentary showing tonight in Jacksonville examines the work-home-life balance for women living in Afghanistan. That and more ahead today. But first this hour, FSCJ is one of the state's largest institutions of higher ed with nearly 50,000 students annually. And as many of those students begin the fall semester, a new president is at the helm. Until recently, John Avendano was the president of Kankakee Community College in Illinois. What are your questions for him? The number again is 549-2937. Dr. Avendano, welcome to Jacksonville.
Good morning, Jessica. Thank you.
How have your first couple of weeks on the job been?
They've been great. Everybody's been warm and welcoming. I've had the opportunity to be out and about in the community for a couple of different functions, and everyone so far has been wonderful and very welcoming, like I said, and very warm. So it's been a great reception coming into the community.
How is it different from Illinois?
Well, it's warmer, right? I think that would be the first thing people would expect.
The humidity.
The humidity. It's warm in Illinois, at least in the summertime as well. But obviously it's a beautiful area. I think if people have never really been out of this area so much or too much, I think you would understand that the fact that this is really a beautiful area. You have so many amenities, so many things that are going for the Jacksonville area. Like I said, it's beautiful. The people have been warm and welcoming. The roads are a little confusing for me still, but I'll get through all that. But everything else has been wonderful.
What do you think the search committee at FSCJ saw in you?
I hope a couple of things. One is I hope that they saw a president who is willing to build relationships with our business and industry, with the college community as well, with civic leaders around the community. Someone who has experience in being a president, someone who's had some successful experience in the past, and for me for the past 10 years, mm-hmm. Someone who's willing to be open and listen to the concerns and the suggestions and recommendations from our community. And that's going to be a big part of what I plan on doing in the next few months.
And what about this opportunity was appealing to you to come down to Jacksonville for?
Well, first, you know, it is Florida. So I was looking, personally, we were looking for another opportunity outside of the state of Illinois. No disrespect to the state of Illinois, but there was a lot of challenges within the state. And Florida was one of the states that I really had my eyes set on. I love the challenge of the size of the institution that it provides. Mm. And so I was looking at that. And at that point in time, it was one of the presidencies that I had opened up. I had received invitations from a number of other institutions over the past couple of years. Around the country, quite honestly. And so, but this is really the first one that kind of checked all the boxes for me.
And you mentioned the size of the institution. Is it larger than where you're coming from, smaller?
Significantly larger. It's an interesting little story. So the local newspaper back in Kankakee, when they had found out that I had received the position, they asked for just kind of an idea of comparison and wanted to get us, is it comparable to Kankakee? Is it larger than Kankakee Community College? And I said, it's about 15 times larger, so if that gives you a perspective. But the issues, the mission, the purpose, the people that we serve are all the same. Mm. And I think that's the key point. We're big on to workforce development. We're big on the idea of providing an education, of advancing and enhancing the quality of life for the people in our area, in our region, our service area. And so we know that we have something to offer everybody.
And I do want to get back to that in just a moment. Workforce development is a big topic in Florida. But first, more about you, Dr. Avendano. Your biography on the FSCJ website says you're a first-generation college student in your family, and English was your second language. So how does your background influence your view of higher education?
Absolutely. So I have. So I am a community college graduate myself. Right. And as you know, as many people know, the state of Florida had advanced their community college system to the state college system. Mm. But FSCJ still sees itself, and rightfully so, as this community's college. And so we provide, like I said, everything for, we have something for everybody in our region, in our community. And so myself, being a community college graduate, I really believed in the mission and the purpose and of what community colleges can do for people. And so as a result, I've spent my last 33 plus years in community colleges, all in the state of Illinois. But I was at three different community colleges because I believe so wholeheartedly in the mission of what we do. So that really shaped who I was. In fact, part of my story, and I think I've told others in the past, when you look at my educational path, I attended a community college for the first 2 years. I did not graduate initially. Mm-hmm. I went on, received my bachelor's degree, then I received my master's degree, and then I actually went back and finished up my associate's degree. Mm-hmm. By then, I really felt that my entire career would be spent in community colleges, and I really wanted to be able to say that I was a community college graduate. Mm. And then after my associate's degree, I got my PhD. So that, like I said, it really shaped me from a purpose and a mission of what I wanted to do and who I wanted to serve.
And what is the role of community colleges?
So again, we're open access institutions. We're here for our community and whatever our community needs, whether it's adult education, adult education, GED, English as a second language, whatever it might be, from anything from that to community and continuing education to corporate training, along with our traditional programs that are designed to transfer our Associate of Arts degree. We have baccalaureate degrees at FSCJ, what I call career and technical education, which here is the AS degree. And so, again, we have something to offer everybody, as well as being the cultural center for our community, right? Our artist series is part of the cultural center. And so we have, again, a variety of things that offer our community. And that's really my mantra is we serve our community. We serve the people within our community. Our graduates from FSCJ are our students. And in the last 2.5 weeks that I've been here, 3.5 weeks that I've been here total, there has yet to be a day that goes by that I don't meet somebody who says, yeah, they're an FSCJ grad, right? Mm. Or they attended FSCJ. And so that's a reminder that our students, they stay, they live, they work, and they contribute back to this community. And so that's what probably gives me the greatest joy.
To those out there listening, are you an FSCJ grad? What are your questions for the new president, John Avendano? Give us a call at 549-2937. We have a couple of comments we'd like to go to online. First of all, Ari on Twitter says, can we please get better professors that care about their students, especially in the math and chemistry departments? It's so hard finding good professors. What do you say to that?
Well, Ari, if you did not have a good experience, I'm sorry to have heard that. I trust that that's something that's happened in the past, but I can assure you going forward, this is something that's always important. To me, the student is the center of everything that we do, right? Now, that also means that we want their educational experience to be a challenging experience, right? We want to make sure that our students are prepared. And so sometimes our professors are challenging, right? They want to challenge them, and we want your degree to mean something. And so I've been here for 2.5 weeks. It's in the summertime, so we're for the most part off our traditional schedule.
Right.
And so I haven't met our 400 full-time faculty, but I plan to do that, and I hope as they hear what my purpose and my vision is for the institution, that would be part of what they also are engaged in. But I can assure you, the ones that I've met so far, they have a genuine concern for the success of our students. They have a genuine interest in our students. I've had the opportunity already. I had a faculty member who invited me to his classroom in the math area, and my experience there was he had a great concern for the success of his students.
Mm. Speaking of faculty, we have another question from Facebook. Robert says, what are your plans to lower the percentage of part-time professors who make a minuscule amount of money? It seems unfair for just a few to make a good living while everyone else gets the stiff.
Well, I don't know if I have a, I don't know if I really fully understood the question. I don't know if I have a plan to minimize the number of adjunct faculty or part-time faculty. I will say this, though, that they play a vital role of our institutions, not only at FSCJ, but across the country. Mm. Adjunct faculty and the plight, if you will, of the adjunct faculty is a challenging one. So I acknowledge that. It is something that many institutions, we depend and we rely on our adjunct faculty as well as our full-time faculty to provide strong quality programs and services and education to our students. So it is a challenge. I will say this also in my past experience in working with adjunct faculty is for many of them, it's a passion. It is not necessarily their main form of income or career. For many of our adjuncts, they bring a level of expertise to the table, to the classroom. They're working professionals themselves, so they bring that expertise to the classroom, which I think is a vital part of the educational learning experience for our students. And again, I acknowledge the work and the commitment that they do, and I do understand that they have a challenging life. That's where we are.
We go now to the phones. Jonathan is calling from downtown. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Welcome to Jacksonville.
Thank you, Jonathan.
I'm from up north, and obviously I'm getting used to the weather as well. My question was geared towards veterans and how FSCJ can work better with veterans. A lot of veterans have over 10 years experience. I was one of those and received no college credit or electives for that from FSCJ. Is there anything we can do to improve that process?
Well, I will take a look at that. I will look into what we do from that standpoint in terms of granting credit. I'm assuming it's from experience that you may have had through the military.
Say again, please.
So I'm assuming you're looking to be granted credit from experience that you had in the military?
There are some, yes, okay. That transfer over. And I'll give you a specific example. I had to ask, since nothing transferred over, if they would consider granting oceanography credit for someone that had studied the ocean for almost 11 years. And eventually that was granted. But I think that FSCJ should do more to work with your Montgomery GI Bill users.
Sure.
To see if their relevant training translates to anything now, you know, in the FSCJ community.
Sure. Thanks, Jonathan, for that question. Jacksonville being a huge military town, of course, an interesting question.
Yeah. And so obviously from that specific question, we'll most definitely take a look and I get a sense of what we do in terms of accepting or how we handle military credit. I will say this, and I think if you're familiar with where I came from, I would urge you to contact my past institution and see what I've done for veterans there. Also had a very good or a large significant number of veterans in the Kankakee, Chicagoland area. And so we made a tremendous number of strides to recognizing and acknowledging the students who were veterans, both current and past veterans at the college, from recognition to having their own commencement ceremony to recognition with their own individual stoles that could be worn during the commencement ceremony. We had dedicated days, and we actually raised funds, and we incorporated a veteran center that we knew it was vital for the services or really for the success of our veteran students. This came from them. It was something that they wanted. There's an interesting story. Someday I'd be happy to share it with you. They actually came into my office and said they needed to have something that was a space of their own, someplace where they could feel at home and they could be amongst their brothers and sisters from the military. And so we created that for them. And so with that, we saw not only an increased number of veterans coming to Kankakee Community College, but we also saw the success of our veterans as they continue to go forward. So please know that my commitment most definitely is to the veterans of our country and those active members of our military service. So I would welcome to talk to you and anyone else to see what the college can do better in that front.
Dr. Avendano, when the economy is good, sometimes enrollment in community colleges goes down. And indeed, the enrollment picture for FSCJ has been challenging. As WJCT News partner the Florida Times Union reported last year, for example, FSCJ at that time was bracing for tougher times in part because of an enrollment drop of 10% and budget cuts that affected most of the departments at that time. So how much of a challenge has that been for FSCJ coming into this, and what do you think needs to be done about enrollment?
So that is the number one priority right now, is looking at our enrollments for the institution. Because as you said, Jessica, that's been really the biggest challenge that FSEJ has faced over the last decade, probably two decades for that matter. And you're absolutely right. Enrollment at institutions of higher ed is a really complicated question. But you did hit one of the key points, and that is when the economy is good, when people are working, that's their focus. Their time and their commitment is for putting food on the table or advancing their careers, and they're working because they have opportunities. And as a result, they have less time to go to school, to continue to get training, et cetera. And so it is a, I guess, inversely proportional situation. So when unemployment is low, enrollment tends to go up in right. institutions of higher ed. And then the opposite is true as well. So as employment is good and goes up, then employment and then enrollments tend to go down at institutions of higher ed. So we understand that. We know that. Mm-hmm. I think the things that Jacksonville has going for it is that it is a growing community. In many communities around the state, especially in rural areas, they're going down in size because quite often the jobs are in the major metropolitan areas. So people are moving out of there mm-hmm. and moving towards the jobs, which again makes a complicating factor for institutions of higher ed and community colleges, et cetera. And so we have to recognize all of the variables that impact enrollment. That being said, we need to make sure that we're scheduled appropriately. We need to make sure that we are responsive to what our students are looking for. We want to make sure that we look at opportunities that are provided maybe through business and industry and through training and through corporate training. If there are more people working, then I would imagine employers want to elevate the educational levels of their employees and their staff. And so that in and of itself may be an opportunity for FSCJ as well.
Right. And a trend, of course, across higher ed is distance learning or online classes. How important is that to FSCJ?
Well, it's probably been one of our areas of growth over the last number of years. And it's an option for students to take online classes. It's very convenient for them. And so we've had tremendous growth in our online classes. Mm. I would ask that as students register for those classes, not look at the convenience, but understand, you know, the expectations of an online course and what is required of them. The convenience is a great thing, but, you know, the challenge of asynchronous learning and making sure that you're still structured in your educational, commitment has to be there as well. So, but like I said, it's something that we've shown some tremendous growth in the last few years.
Right. This year, Governor Ron DeSantis signed an executive order outlining a goal to make Florida number one in the nation for workforce education by 2030 and to ensure students are ready for what he called high demand, high wage jobs. So this is a two-part question for you. For those who don't know, can you just tell us what workforce education means and what is FSCJ's role in the governor's goal?
Sure. And so I do want to acknowledge Governor DeSantis. When I had been chosen as the next president for FSCJ, I was excited to have received a personal letter from him congratulating me and outlining what his goals were. And that is to be a world-class educational state focused on workforce development. So he obviously, that's a passion of his and a goal for the state of Florida. And so what it means is just making sure that we are preparing our workforce. We have a workforce that's very diverse, you know, in technology, in healthcare, in education, in public service, in the finance business community. There's some manufacturing in the area. And so it's making sure that first and foremost, we're meeting the workforce needs, our employers' needs. So that is one of the biggest challenges that any company has. They want to be competitive. And to be competitive, they have to have a qualified, skilled, trained workforce. And so what does that mean? It means that's where the college steps in. We need to listen to what business and industry is telling us. Mm-hmm. If these are the competencies, both the technical skills and the what they would call the soft skills from their future employees, then we need to make sure that we're incorporating that into the curriculum and that our students are prepared for the workforce and to advance companies and to advance regions and to attract other business and industry to the area and to the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm. Switching gears a little bit, this spring, FSCJ closed down its cafe downtown after about a year. It was called 20 West. The restaurant was part of a student housing complex and also part of the culinary program at FSCJ. And at the time it opened, it was heralded as this way to revitalize downtown. So how important is an expanded downtown presence to FSCJ today?
So I'm going to address that in a couple of ways. First of all, I was a little brokenhearted. The 20 West had to go away. It was actually still open and operational as I was going through the interview process. Mm-hmm. And I understood that it was a decision that had to be made. Some things just come down to being a financial decision. Again, we have to be good stewards of taxpayer dollars. And it was a pretty significant cost to the institution. Having said that, doesn't mean that it wasn't a good idea. It might still be a good idea. We just may find a different way to approach that. I was also heartbroken because the fact of when I first arrived here, many people probably don't know this, I stayed at 20 West.
Oh.
So I lived there amongst the students for the first 10 or 11 days and had a great time in meeting with the students. So I personally would have loved to have had a cafe right at downstairs from where I was staying. But that aside, I do think that an energized downtown area is vital to the success of any metropolitan city. And in the 10 or 11 days that I was there, we had the opportunity, my wife and I both lived there. We had the opportunity to visit a number of the other, the eateries and the restaurants and places that were downtown and got a chance to take advantage of a lot of the vibe that was happening down. So there's a lot happening there. Mm. And I think that's great for our students, the students that we do have. 20 West, the student housing project is still open. And by the way, please, if you haven't had the chance to visit it, or if you're thinking about an opportunity of maybe moving out of the house and trying to get a little bit of that collegiate experience, I would highly recommend it. 20 West is a beautiful facility. It's right, again, it's right downtown on Adams Street. And it's a great experience. We do have a number of students who are there already in the summertime, and I had a chance to visit with them when I was there, and they were telling me some of their some of the things that they liked and some of the challenges, et cetera. But it really is a great facility, close to a lot of the amenities. It's really not that far from our downtown campus,
right?
And so I think it has a lot to offer, and I think it's part of what helps energize a downtown area. Mm. You know, if you have a steady flow of students that are moving into those areas, that helps the restaurants and the businesses and the, you know, adjacent to where they're living.
Sure. And how important is FSCJ's relationship with UNF and with high schools in the area?
So that'll be part of my tour, if you will, in the first few months. I've already had the opportunity to talk to Dr. Szymanski at UNF, and mm-hmm. He reached out to me first, and we had a great phone conversation. I had a chance to chat with him right before a Rotary luncheon, and so I know that the college already has a number of plans or transitional plans, transfer options for our students in UNF. And again, I think for those who are seeking the baccalaureate, if it's a program that the college doesn't have, because we do have some baccalaureate programs, it's a great opportunity to build those relationships with transfer institutions. And I know we have other transfer institutions in our area as well, but UNF is the institution I think most people associate with as a transfer option.
Right.
And then K-12 is vital. I mean, the students who graduate from high school, again, I'm of the mindset that we have something to offer everybody. You're going to receive a high-quality education, and I want to start with that first, that it's going to be a high-quality education at a very affordable price, and so tuition rates. And so that, I think, is one of the biggest issues facing higher ed are the students that are coming out with tremendous student debt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's an easy way to avoid that. Really start those 2 years or all 4 years at FSCJ. I believe in it so much. Like I said earlier, I was a community college graduate. Now, again, albeit 35 years ago or whenever it was when I started there. But all three of my children went to community colleges. And that's how much I believe in community colleges. All three are community college graduates. All three have graduated from universities. And two have excellent jobs. And the third is starting medical school this week. So, if you're looking at learning a trade, learning something in the career field, you want to be something in the healthcare, we have something to offer. If you're looking for those baccalaureate business options, communication options, we have options. If your goal is some point to be a doctor, we have options. So I think we have something to offer our entire community.
The phones are lighting up. Yeah. Jason in Riverside, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, and good morning to you both. Good morning, Dr. Avendano.
Jason, how are you?
I'm well. I just wanted to publicly welcome you to the college and our community, and to tell all of Jacksonville and Nassau County and the surrounding areas that the faculty at FSCJ are excited to have you and are optimistic about the bridges that you will build both internally and externally. We have much to offer this community, and we look forward to you stewarding us into an area or a time when everyone truly sees FSCJ as the community's college.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jason. And Jason is one of our professors at FSCJ, and he's been also very welcoming me to the institution. He was part of the search committee, so I am indebted to him. And so thank you, Jason, for having been part of that process, but also for welcoming me here at FSCJ. And he's absolutely right. It begins with making sure that we build bridges with everybody, ironically enough, in a city that has a number of bridges across the river, that we build bridges with everybody. And let people know that FSCJ is their community college. We are this community's college. And so we have to be committed to that. It's more than just saying that. It's more than a catchphrase. We really, truly have to be committed to doing that. And so I hope people will take us all up on that. And thank you again, Jason. Appreciate that.
Thanks for your comment.
Thank you, sir.
And a specific question we have on Twitter from Brian: are there courses that prepare locals to work as crew on film or TV sets? For instance, electrical courses might address skills for gaffers.
I'm gonna say yes, but it's a qualified yes. So I'm still learning the entire 150 programs.
You don't know the entire catalog?
We have 150 programs in addition to our baccalaureate degree programs. And so I will look into that. Or please feel free to give the college a call at FSCJ and give our advising office a call. And I'm sure they would be more than happy to let you know. I do know that we do have a theater program. I did know that. Actually, we were the host this summer for one of the theater camps in town, and we had the high school production of Newsies from Disney. So that was a great experience. So,
wow.
Again, we have a lot of different things to offer our community.
Now, let's get to some of your immediate goals. You've just been on the job a couple of weeks. You're coming in. What do you want to do within the first year?
Sure. I'll even accelerate that a little bit as well. So I've already met with all of our trustees one-on-one. I hope to meet with our top major employers. And when I said top major employers, I'm talking at least, 25 to 35 are our big businesses in the area, meeting with their CEOs. We've already started doing that. Mm-hmm. I was actually here in the station yesterday meeting with David McGowan as one of those. So hope to meet with business and industry to see what FSCJ does well, what we could do in the future, where they see their business and industry, their organizations going in the future, and how FSCJ can be part of that. A big part of that is also meeting internally with obviously professors like Jason and the internal community. Had a wonderful reception. The college had a wonderful reception for me on my third day here. Mm-hmm. And so I had the opportunity to meet 350 to 400 of my closest friends now. and again, everybody was warm and welcoming there. But a bigger part of that is, again, continuing to meet the internal members of our institution, our vital players at the institution, and hearing their concerns, hearing where they see the college should be going. I think this is a team thing. I'm big in athletics. I come out of athletics. So it's a team effort, and it's all of us working together to make sure that we advance the mission of the institution. So a big part of what I'm doing is meeting with our internal constituents, with business and industry, with our K-12, with our legislators. A big part of higher ed in Florida, especially public higher ed in Florida, is making sure that our legislators understand our needs. And so I'll be conducting quite a bit of that as well. Enrollment, like I already said early on, is a primary focus for me for this coming year. Mm-hmm. you know, finding the friends of FSCJ, those who have been friendly to FSCJ and see the vital role that we play in the community and as a result have maybe provided contributions to the college. And I want to thank them and also see what else they think the college could be doing. So it'll be a busy first year. It's been a busy 2.5 weeks. But it'll be a busy 6 months to a year. So those are some of the key things that I plan to be doing.
And anything on the horizon industry-wide that you think is changing for community colleges and the direction FSCJ could go?
Well, again, I think the needs of the students that come in, I think the expectations, as we heard a little bit in our phone calls, right? The expectations of our students are something that we have to listen to and understand and be able to respond to and evolve to, right? And so that's one thing I think higher ed always can learn from is understanding that things change. When you think back, and for those who can't see, you know, I'm going to pull out my cell phone, my smartphone. How is that used anymore as a tool for education and for learning? Because let's face it, that's the way this next generation is really gathering quite a bit of their information. Mm-hmm. So understanding that technology is going to continue to play a major factor in how we deliver our programs, how we deliver our services, but also how we reach our students and how our students can be reaching us, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we don't know how to help students if they don't let us know how to help them.
Well, my guest is John Avendano, the president of FSCJ. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you, Jessica. I appreciate it.
Up next, a filmmaker shares what it's like being a working woman in Afghanistan today. She'll be in Jacksonville tonight. That's up after the break.
By the time today's babies are 80 years old, the sea is projected to have risen up to 6.5 feet. So what's being done to protect life on the first coast? At ADAPT from WJCT, you'll find stories about adaptation by everyone from the Navy to realtors and the city of Jacksonville. Join us now at adaptflorida.org.
This week, listen in for our broadcast from Carnegie Hall with Bela Fleck and Edgar Meyer. Plus, Maeve Higgins. You won't want to miss it.
Saturday evening at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, this is Keith Marks. Join me every Thursday evening at 11 p.m. for Avant Radio, a show of curious music for curious minds. Each show is themed, curated, and contextualized to explore new music. Come get curious on Thursdays at 11 on 89.9 FM.
Welcome back. This is First Coast Connect. I'm Jessica Palumbo in for Melissa Ross. A film called Facing the Dragon is screening tonight, followed by a Q&A with the award-winning filmmaker, Sadiqa Mojadidi. She joins me now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Your film is focused on two women. Why did you decide to follow them?
Well, I was really interested in following women in Afghanistan who had kind of been fostered over the 15 years of international aid and support that had poured into Afghanistan after 2001, 2002. And so my two characters, one is a politician and one is a journalist, they really kind of grew into their own during this period. And I was just really interested in following those women. I found them personally intriguing. And also I was interested in what was going to happen to them after the U.S. withdrawal in 2014. So I was very much interested in this particular period.
Right. And how they had been affected by receiving the aid and then ending that.
That's right.
And what is kind of the general arc of their story?
Well, you know, I had no idea where I was going to end up when I first started the film. It took me 5 years to make it.
Wow.
It took me 5 years to finish it. And it took me 2 years to, it took me, no, roughly about a year, year and a half, to convince them to let me film with them.
So you were just trying to get permission to start filming for
yes.
that long?
Yes.
18 months?
Yes.
Wow.
So it was a very long road, and it took me a long time to convince them to trust me. I mean, these are both women who, just like women anywhere in the world who are politicians and who are a journalist, they are very media savvy,
mm-hmm.
and they live a very public life. And so they were very hesitant to allow me to, and I wanted to tell a very personal story as well as a public one. So they were very, very hesitant in terms of trusting me to allow me to really embed with them. And that was really the big obstacle. And once they were on board, the film sort of started to really, it started to really have its own life, its own story. It wasn't the story. I mean, I knew I was going to follow them and I was hoping for certain things, but in without giving too much of the film away,
mm-hmm.
It's really about two women, two mothers who are caught between choosing between their country, their ambition, and their children and their family. And I think that's a really universal theme. Mm. And I think that that's something that I hope that when people see it, really connect to that aspect of the story, that it's not just about women in Afghanistan, that we can't understand these people. And then what happens in the course of the story is they both make very different decisions. And so they have to, and then their stories kind of diverge. Mm. And at the end of the story, they're in very different places. And I don't think either one is really reconciled by the decisions that they made. I think they both feel very ambivalent about them, like most people in life.
Right.
Like most of us.
So what is your connection to Afghanistan? Why is that your subject?
Well, my connection is that my family's from Afghanistan. I was born there, but I came to Jacksonville when I was two. My parents came here and did their residencies at St. Vincent's Hospital. I grew up in Jacksonville. I grew up on the South Side. And my father had always had a very strong connection to the country. He did a lot of refugee relief work throughout the years. But I just always grew up, I think, like many children of first generation, you know, immigrants, wanting to understand the place where my parents came from, a culture that I only knew about but had never really experienced. And so I started going back to Afghanistan starting in 2003. So I had made a previous film there
mm-hmm.
That aired on Independent Lens, and then I took some time off, and then I decided that I was interested in trying to tell a story again there. So I spent a lot of time there. I think the film for me is just a way for me to have my own experience of the place, my own memories. And it was a way to try to understand my relationship to it through these women
right.
who I ended up becoming very, very close to and still very, very close to them.
Mm. So you grew up here in Jacksonville. You moved away to pursue a career in film, but you recently returned to the South. Why is that?
Yes, that's a good question. Well, I decided to accept a teaching position at the Savannah College of Art and Design. So I'll be teaching there in the fall. And my family still lives here, so I have a very strong connection to the South. I've lived in New York for many years. But I think I feel like I'm ready to come back here and to share the experiences that I've gained over the years. And I'm really excited about teaching in Savannah and hopefully sharing the things that I've learned with students there. And there are many things I love about the South. There are many things that are beautiful and that I love and that are complicated. And there are many people here as I was growing up here in Jacksonville. And I went to the University of Florida, people at the University of Florida that had a tremendous impact on me and shaping me. And they were from here. So, you know, I have a lot to be grateful for.
You said the word complicated. What were you thinking when you said that?
Well, I mean, I think that especially having lived in New York City for a long time and lived in Chicago and lived, you know, in other places, people have a very monolithic view of the South and a very stereotypical view of the South. But the South is rich. It's regionally rich. It's regionally complicated. There, Jacksonville is not the city that I grew up in the 70s. It's incredibly diverse now. It has a very complicated immigrant community, which I think only makes the city richer and more and interesting. And so I guess what I mean that it's complicated, I say that with, you know, to honor this place and to not try to stereotype, you know, who we think people are that come from the South. And I think sometimes in the North and in cities, urban cities in the North, there is a little bit of a stigma. And so I say it, you know, to respond to that.
What was it like growing up the daughter of immigrants here in Jacksonville?
Well, I grew up here in the 70s and in the 80s. It was very difficult. It was, you know, we were very small. I mean, my parents are Afghan, and there wasn't a large Afghan community when I was growing up here. Now there is. It was very small. We were very kind of isolated. And the city in the 70s and throughout was very segregated. It was a very segregated city. It was very conservative. And I don't think most people actually knew where we were from.
Yeah. What did they think?
I don't know. I mean, it was a range of things. You know, they didn't really know where Afghanistan was or, you know, what people were like from Afghanistan. People used to think I spoke Spanish or, you know, they didn't really have any kind of markers. But now that's very different because we've had a war in Afghanistan and a lot of people and their families have been involved in that. So people do know a lot more about Afghanistan and about Muslims and about people from that part of the world. So I think now, in some ways, it's even a little more difficult.
Well, we are getting to the end of our time. I want to remind our listeners, your film is screening tonight. It's called Facing the Dragon at Jacksonville's Museum of Contemporary Art, MoCA, starting at 7. Tickets are $10 or $5 for museum members. Sadiqa Mojadidi, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Up next, WJCT has always been a little bit rock and roll, and soon will also be a little bit country. Find out why after this break.
Online retailers are offering free shipping, and more online shopping means more items that get returned.
Where does it end up? Does it get resold? Does it get trashed? You know, what's the life of this returned merchandise?
I don't know. I'm Kai Rizdal. How companies are dealing with returns, next time on Marketplace.
This evening at 6 here on 89.9 WJCT.
A young man from Honduras unlocks the door to his room. He's safety conscious now since he was mugged on the street. He's one of thousands of migrants waiting in Tijuana while his asylum claim is heard across the border in San Diego. Next time on The World, a real-life example of President Trump's Remain in Mexico policy and how it weighs on one asylum seeker. It's on The World. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. For veterans with mental health issues, the biggest hurdle is often admitting they need help.
I would say be honest with yourself. You know, you don't have to be a hero. You don't have to project that you are okay if you're not.
Our conversation with two vets about PTSD continues next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 1 here on 89.9 WJCT.
Toni Morrison would rise before the sun to put words to paper, scribble down scenes while riding the subway to work, and dream of characters as she put her children to bed. The single mom became a celebrated author who enhanced the canon of American literature. Remembering Toni Morrison, the prose and the person, next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
If you want to hear the songs of Zion coming from the land of the endless spring.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, we've gone country. WJCT music director David Luckin joins me now to talk all about the new pop-up country station on channel 89.9 HD4. Hi, David.
Hi, Jessica.
This pop-up station spans decades of country, David.
Starts in the 20s, like Ken Burns' documentary, and ends with today's music and everything in between, plus the influences of country on folk, bluegrass, and the blues.
You mentioned Ken Burns' documentary. That's coming up on PBS next month.
September 15th, it premieres. I've watched 5.5 hours of the 8, and it is absolutely brilliant. This thing is so good. So we're going to play country music for a month, from August 15th till September 15th, so you're going to be so well-educated on the music, and then Ken Burns is going to give you the backstory and introduce you to all the wonderful players and singers and artists that made country music such a major part of the fabric of American culture.
On another faded city of our land, far, far, I heard the cry from me.
What's some of the earliest stuff that we'll hear on the station, David?
We will start way back with Charlie Poole and Jimmy Rogers in the 20s, and even Jimmy Rogers with the King of Jazz, Louis Armstrong.
Standing on the corner, I didn't mean no harm. Along come a police, he took me by the arm. It was down in Memphis.
And that, Jessica, is just a perfect example, which proves the theory that all music is just music. Here's country music and jazz music mixed together. Who would have thought? I've played this song for some people who didn't think country and blues and jazz had anything to do with each other. And when you hear Lewis playing behind Jimmy Rogers, the brakeman, it all makes sense. It all comes together that it's just music. It's just great music interpreted in many different ways.
I'm a Tennessee hustler, I don't have to wait.
So what you're saying is you might want to tune into the station, David, even if you don't think you really like country music, because you're playing songs that are simply country influenced too.
Absolutely. So we'll have some folk music, we'll have some bluegrass music, we'll have some blues, because the blues in the early country are very, very similar. So really, country music is telling the story of America. When you watch Ken Burns' special, you don't have to be a fan of country music just to follow the history of popular music, whether it's country, jazz, or popular music in American society. And that's what Ken Burns does so well. And I'm trying to do the same thing, only musically, without the narrative. So we're going to take you from Jimmy Rogers and Louis Armstrong to rock and roll in the 60s with people like the Lovin' Spoonful.
Did you ever have to make up your mind and pick up on one and leave the other behind?
So you can hear everything that's country or influenced by country for a whole month before you see the show. So you're going to be really well educated. You're going to know more about country music than you even wanted to know. And you're going to love it because I'm not a big country fan, but when I put this station together, there's just so much great music. It doesn't matter what genre it is.
And is there modern country music too?
Yes, there is. There's not as much because everyone else airs that. You can go to the country station in town and hear all the new music. So we wanted to fill a niche that wasn't necessarily being served. But we get up to Garth Brooks and Reba McEntire and a lot of the new music too, but more in kind of a greatest hits way where the older music is really a history lesson. You're going to hear just great music about everything that's American from the 20s to today.
What's one of the most exciting contemporary songs that you've included, David?
I don't know if it's exciting, but when I was doing my research, I found a group called The Great Yawn. And I don't even know what category this fits. I mean, I played it for people and people say, that's not country, but it comes under the country umbrella. So we will play the folks a bit of this. And we've got more music like this on the pop-up station too. Just modern country, I guess I would call it. But it's not that power pop big stadium country like Garth Brooks and those folks. This is more probably the folk influence in country than the big stadium rock and roll, you know.
Let's take a listen to The Great Yawn.
It's not quite perfect, but should it be? It's not quite worth it, but should it be? We're not quite deserving, but should we be? Second guessing is a grieving recipe.
I'm with you, David. I don't know if I would call myself a country music lover, but this is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really nice music. So this is a chance for everyone to open up their musical gates that they keep, where they gatekeep what kind of music they want to hear, and expand your mind and expand your musical knowledge and tune in to the pop-up country station on HD4 right here on 89.9. And don't miss the Ken Burns documentary on country music. It is really, really good. If you like history, you don't have to like country. Just sit back and watch America's history.
Pop-up Country officially launches August 15th. If you get lucky, you might find it sometime before then. That's WJCT Music Director David Luckin. Thanks, David.
My pleasure.
I'm Jessica Palumbo. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum directs our show. Tomorrow, Melissa Ross returns to the host chair to take a look at the biggest stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. Thanks for tuning in.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.